woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, hope it's actually next. I'll come out. Matt Wilbur on the board. S&P futures, they were up 1750, actually. We've got the Dow futures up 168. Nasdaq futures up 58. So we're off to the races. I hate to how to say this, but maybe momentarily, because we did this twice or three times yesterday. Very, very strange, Kevin. Do I hope the people in the White House are trading this, or do I hope they're too dumb to trade it? What am I hoping here? Yesterday, we had two or three massive moves in the market generated by the White House with the idea with China. First, China was going to lower the auto tariffs. We go flying out of the gate in the morning, up like 40 points from the night before. And then all of a sudden, we're going to do something bad to them. We're going to go flying down during the day, and then Trump says, well, if they make peace with him, he can intervene in the court case with this lady in Vancouver. Still absolutely clueless as to what the separation of powers is. Very strange. I just wish I could get the little memos coming out of there. I think I'd be very wealthy. And where would I be? Monaco or someplace? Is that a nice spot?
That could be okay. But I do have a question about that, because I'm really don't have a point of reference on this from other presidents. Is it unusual for a president to comment on different kinds of, you know, trade negotiations or other negotiations that are happening during the middle of it? I mean, sometimes I would guess they want to keep everything under lock and key. But I'm trying to remember back to the Pacific Trade Partnership or whatever that was called. And those ongoing negotiations, were there discussions of that as it happened? Because I don't know how much of this, other than the fact that Trump is out there every single day blabbing about things, is it that unusual, or is it, or am I way off base?
Well, the whole idea that tweets is new. I mean, that didn't happen. I mean, you had nowhere near that kind of communication.
Well, you didn't have it directly, from President Obama, and you certainly didn't have it from President Bush, because I don't think Twitter was very popular back then. But you did have, like, Organizing for America and, you know, things like that, which were President Obama's organizations that had plenty of stuff going out on social media.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's not like nothing. Like I said, in the last administration, the market moving news was always the Fed, and you wanted that. You wanted that little. That's where the market would be, heading south on a 2 day period, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, one of the Fed governors in Shanghai or someplace would give a speech and say, "Well, gee, I think we're gonna, data dependent. It looks to me like the data is not so good, so we might wait another 3 months, and all of a sudden we'd have this massive flip in the middle of the night." So, I mean, there's always going to be news that drives the market, but I've never seen it like this in the same day, where the White House will say
where
something.
Where we're back and forth like that?
Yeah, where the White House will say something in the morning, this one, boy, we're going to screw these Chinese like there's no tomorrow. All of a sudden the market's down 300 points, and you run a guy out there in the afternoon and you say, "That's not what he meant," and it turns around and goes the other way. Especially as soon as you see the guy come out there, there's people that are already making the buys. I mean, it's really obvious that somebody's getting the memo before you are. all during the trading day. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, we're talking.
Okay, and you know, from that, and the you know messaging from the White House is, you know, clearly one of the the biggest differences between this particular presidency and any other, because he not only is all over the place, he's always stepping on his own messages. You know, he's just not. I don't know. He's not filtered, I guess, is probably the nicest way I can say it, where he, you know, if it comes into his head, it goes, you know, for some people, it goes out your mouth. In his case, if it comes into his head, it goes out on his Twitter feed.
What did Warren Buffett say, that if you think somebody's a son of a bitch, you reserve the right to call him that tomorrow after you think about it for a night?
Yeah, well, that's definitely not our president. Never has been.
No.
You know, even before he got into politics, my understanding is that was sort of how he rolled. So I guess that's unusual. What I'm wondering is, I'm asking because I don't remember. Is the information flow out of the White House unusual?
Yes.
You know, not just odd or different, but is it unusual for information to flow out of the White House like that in the midst of something like a trade negotiation? Or, you know, maybe we just relied on leaks before. It wasn't, you know,
well, there was never
so much anything official coming out of the mouths of, or anything coming out of the mouths of officials on the record. Maybe it was just leaks.
Well, just
I don't know. I'm trying to think back, and I really don't.
I've never, you know, it starts to blur after 35 years in the business, but I remember trade negotiation as you have, like the Pacific thing, putting it together. You have, you know, all kinds of people on your side that are supposedly the best and the brightest. I mean, most everybody we've ever had in the show that asked, like, we've asked who the trade negotiators are. They've always said they're really smart people. They're like the best we have. We'll go someplace. We'll have a 10-day meeting somewhere and come back for 6 months and go over it with everybody here and hear comments from the soybean people. I mean, it's 99% drudgery, Kevin. I mean, it's working your way through this stuff is my understanding. I mean, you're the one who sent me the thing of the NAFTA. Could you imagine you and I snoozing through that negotiation? And every once in a while you'll hear a flare up of, the soybean people think they're getting screwed the way it's written. And some senator will bitch and moan, you know, out of a state like Illinois, that, you know, we can't deal with the soybean piece or the corn piece. And that's when next time they go and have the meeting, they say, all right, it's kind of a process, but it's kind of a boring ass process. You know what I'm saying? It's not the president calling the other, calling the guy in Canada, you know, something wrong with them in the dairy thing, and they're screwing us on purpose, and then the lady comes here. What do you say about her? She was too short, too fat, something. Man, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, it's nothing you and I would even care to listen to.
The communication. I'm trying to separate out here communication style versus communication itself, and what we've gotten in the past versus what we're getting now. I think what we're getting now is more chaotic for sure. I don't know that it's all that new. It's just different and weird.
If I could describe it, I would say it would be, I think it was more like localized chaos when you knew it was the month they were talking about your stuff. Your a trade association got involved. Your trade association would talk to the people of Congress, and what are these guys doing about our stuff? What's our stuff going to come out like? I mean, everybody was involved, but kind of sequentially, you know what I mean? But it wasn't. I mean, you didn't have the president bitching about the soybean stuff. You know, I mean, it was the soybean guys would be meeting with their congressmen, meeting with the trade guys. You know, what do you get? I'm saying it was all in the detail. I mean, it was never called quote a deal. It's 1,000 pages of stuff. I mean, just
okay.
the whole idea of the enormity of it is different. You know what I'm saying? And then, and I truly don't really understand the idea that we're gonna, you know, start punishing a lot of these countries when we pull out of a deal, and that we expect people to. It's not like I'm bitching at the president. I'm just saying I don't know where you get the authority to do what he's doing. I mean, I guess if you, I guess if you're powerful, you just do whatever you want to do. But the I don't see how if Iran was supposed to get, you know, I'm a fan of Iran, the Ayatollah. I mean, I think they took Jimmy Carter with the cleaners pretty good. We certainly had Fari talk about that a few times, but you know, is Boeing got to stand down? They can't sell them anything now, or now is it wrong for Airbus to sell them something? I mean, those guys are still in the pact. I've never heard of this in and out kind of thing, you know, to this extent. So I don't even know if there's precedent for it. Do you?
I don't know.
I mean, like how?
Well, wait a minute. I got to use the news term. You know, when they don't know on the news, they say it's unclear.
It's unclear. Yeah, it's unclear.
It's unclear.
But I mean, if you and I have a we're part of this deal, which of course we're never part of the deal, and we're shipping. I don't know. What do you know a lot about that? I don't. Servers to Iran that they weren't able to buy before, the giant carry deal. All of a sudden, now they're getting them. And now we shipped one a month ago. It's intercepted at the border. You and I going to jail? But all of a sudden, now you can't?
You might. In that particular case, I don't know that we ever agreed to, for that kind of technology to be shipped out.
Yeah, I have no idea what was on the list. I mean, I just brought that up as an example. I'm not... Well, obviously, if airplanes are on there, they're pretty advanced.
Yeah, they are, and you know, if we're selling airplanes to Iran because it's part of the New Deal, then you know that's what's legal. The question is what is and isn't legal, because when you buy things in the United States from U.S. producers, you are required to say, "I'm not shipping it anywhere else." Or if the answer is yes, then you have to start saying where, and it all gets registered. So that's the issue with the Chinese company I haven't read the whole complaint against them, but I'm sure the whole thing is, hey, you said you weren't going to do this and you're doing it.
Well, I agree. But to me, there's a difference, and I'm splitting hairs between something you could never, let's say a cap for a nuclear bomb. I'm going to say that was on the original list you couldn't sell them, and it was on the amended list you couldn't sell them. So there's,
I would guess, yes.
But we're talking about a laptop. You know, I don't know if it's on the original list, but not on the second list. For God's sake, this thing's changing so fast. How do you even, how do you prosecute somebody from another country for that? Not to mention the fact, how many? I've heard tell that on a new like Cadillac, all tricked out, if whatever your definition of computer is, there's something like 25 of them on the thing. Now some of them must just be a little tiny chip, you know, running your heater or something. But how many computer like things do you think are on an airplane?
You know, how many are in your kitchen?
Mine, none.
Okay, but in many a kitchen.
Yeah.
It's not only it's there, but it's broadcasting to the internet so that you can fire up your microwave when you're two blocks from home and walk into a hot meal, or you can start up your oven, or you whatever. So
anybody who's ever read 1984, why would you ever want that? just saying.
People do it, and it is a gigantic security risk.
Your refrigerator keeping inventory on everything and telling you when you need to go buy new things or they're about to expire.
Yeah. Or simple stuff. People set up security systems at home.
Well, that I can understand.
I have neighbors who are part-timers. They live in Chicago. They have security cameras up, and they will look. Because I'll get a text or a phone call from one of them saying something's doesn't look right outside my house. Would you mind checking it out for me?
And in which case, you should go out there and immediately moon them.
I'm perfectly happy to help out my neighbors.
Doesn't mean you can't moon them.
Doesn't mean you can't moon them.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah,
that's
unbelievable.
The security issue with that is... that and Carl writes about this all the time. They're called IoT exports. IoT stands for Internet of Things. So when you think of the internet, you think of endpoints and computers and servers and web servers and all that kind of stuff. The Internet of Things is the things, the other devices that are not really computing devices, they just have computing content. And in those cases, they're eminently exploitable. And, you know, once it's on your home network, then that's a pathway into your the rest of your home network, and that's dangerous.
Without asking about any of your skills or anything, how easy would it be for me, well, for me, would be very difficult, how easy would it be for someone to know what the hell they were doing to break into this guy's thing and realize he's not home, I'm going in there and robbing the place?
Conceivably, that could be done.
But is it really, really easy or what?
Well, it depends, because there are steps that one should take, you know, to use industry lingo, a little bit, you're hardening your network. So you're making it more difficult, you know, that everything is firewalled. There is no such thing as foolproof or hackproof or anything like that, but you can make it much more challenging.
Well, our buddy Dr. J was sitting in first class, which he sits all the time. Actually, no, he was actually sitting on coach a while ago, and I was ready to call him and give him grief, but I didn't. And a guy across the aisle from his giant's hacking away on his computer. The guy says, "Hey, you want me to tell you your password?" The guy goes, "Why would you be able to tell me my password? I can tell everybody here their password. Any Wi-Fi stuff I can tell just what everybody's doing. I can hack right in." And
oh, yeah.
I've heard that from a bunch of people.
And it is not unusual. There are a couple of things that, you know, law enforcement uses cell site simulators often in many states. I think Illinois has made some moves to make that illegal, which is good. But a cell site simulator intercepts
your cell signal
and then passes on your phone calls after it sucks all the data off of your telephone, and including your phone call activity. So even if you're not using a smartphone, that doesn't mean they can't get your telephone call activity. Now that you know that there are similar types of people who would do that, say in a coffee shop. They'll go in, they'll sit down. The guy over in the corner is broadcasting as if he's a Wi-Fi network, and as soon as you connect to that particular free Wi-Fi network, then your signal is getting passed through that computer. He's in your computer, and he's got your stuff.
The question I have is, since by having you on the show a lot, and you know, another few people, Maddie can be somewhat knowledgeable in this area as well, I know enough, and I'm the biggest Luddite ever with this stuff. Why would I ever want to be on Wi-Fi? I never have been, and I never ever intend to be. I might buy my stuff. If I have to get on there and find directions, I'll pay for my 2 minutes that I hook in. Why do I need to be on Wi-Fi?
It depends on how much, where you are, what kind of computing you want to do, etc. There are some types of Wi-Fi sites that are notoriously worse than others. I think you're probably better off if you use your cell phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot.
That's what I mean.
If you're connecting to most public Wi-Fi.
Yeah, well, I mean,
at least you have a measure of control that way versus, say, a coffee shop or a hotel or something like that where they're notoriously compromised.
Well, I keep waiting for the day, not that I get arrested, I don't want to be arrested, but where somebody says on TV, they go, "Well, grab his cell phone. We'll know everything they know about the guy." They'll grab mine, they'll find, what do I got, Maddie? 112 numbers in there and nothing else? I got one picture of my niece, my grandniece.
Tom, every time you make a phone call, that metadata is recorded. The metadata.
Well, that part I know.
Metadata means data about the data. Okay, so, you know, they may not have your phone call and recorded, but they have your calling number, the number you called, how long the call lasted, and so on. That's the metadata. When they tell you it's just the metadata that they've collected, that's what they mean. And so what does that tell you about someone? Let's say, for example, I get a call every Tuesday from a psychiatrist's office. What do you know?
You do?
No, let's just say.
So just saying.
That's one of my favorite examples.
Yes.
Well, what do you know about me?
What if I call Dr. Blay to talk about football? They think I'm calling my shrink?
If you call him every single Tuesday, Or if he calls you every single Tuesday, that probably means you're getting a reminder call for your appointment on Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah.
What if you get a call from an obstetrician, and then the next call you place is to Planned Parenthood? What do they know about you?
What if the second call
is that, and is that their business?
Or if it's a female, not your wife, that's even worse.
Yeah, and you know what? If you have the ongoing calls to the female, not your wife, is it entirely possible that you probably shouldn't run for office at any point soon? Because as soon as you become a political opponent, that's the kind of thing that could get leaked.
So should I have a burn phone?
Well, you could. That's, you know, that's an option for you.
But
my point is this.
Yeah,
by
the way, I know
there is a whole lot of data gathered about us as it stands right now. And, you know, any reason to think we have privacy is just an illusion. We do not. And I think this is something, it's a shame because we never, ever have serious discussions about it in campaigns. It's not a substantial issue. There aren't many people at all in the political world who are making a big deal about it. It's one of the things I like about Rand Paul is, he does raise the privacy issues all the time. But not everybody else is doing
that. Well, I'm going to pile on you a little bit because privacy issue is a serious issue. The monopoly, oligopoly issue and the people who have the information is a serious issue, and the two together, I think, are terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, the Google guy was just testifying the other day. I saw a report. I'll see if I can find video of it and tweet it out about what data gets collected on you, even if you put your phone in airplane mode and you go around, and what, you know, what does Google know at the end of the day? It is terrifying.
Really briefly, I told you what happened to my I have a U.S. Bank credit card. So I have three credit cards. I have my American Express, and I have my Costco American Express and one other one. So I get all of them. They send me the thing now with the chip. This is like 2 years ago. Within 3 weeks, all three of them are compromised with the chip, where they never were before without the chip. The chip is supposed to be much better. So I get the call from U.S. Bank. By the way, we got all these charges. It's coming through. We don't think they're you, but we just want to run through them, see which ones are yours, which ones aren't. Okay. Here's $25 for the Tripoli tap. That's you, right? Yeah, that's me. we got $50 from Duluth Trading. Is that you? Yeah, that's you. How about, you know, the other one was like Dick's Sports. That's you. How about a blouse out in Schaumburg? That's not you, is it? No, no, it's not. She was right out of 10 of them. She was right on every single one. Which was me and which wasn't. How scary is that? Oh, here's another $25 for a Tripoli tap. Is that you? Yeah, that's me. How about parking outside of Club Lago? Yeah, that's me. I mean, it's you're right. It's pretty. Most of it's pretty inoffensive, but it's also pretty scary.
It is. It's highly intrusive, and I, you know, this is something. You know, if you take match generation, it's going to be a big issue in your lifetime.
But they don't care.
Like yours and mine, we're kind of on the back end of this, and we can sit back in our rockers on the porch and watch it. Future generations are going to have to deal with this more and more and more.
Kevin, after break, we have Mr. Robert Rayola. This should be very interesting. SP Futures now 1850 up. Dow Futures up 166. Come back, Mr. Robert Rayola, the tax man to the stars. I want to be big enough where he's my tax man someday, Kevin. What do you think? We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. We also have Mr. Robert Raiola in a second. S&P futures now up 22, Dow up 208, and NASDAQ up 78 as Trump is now saying the trade thing is going to be a positive thing. Somewhere during the day, we'll see if that switches, and we want to be a seller, but very, very bizarre. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 103. It's all 4%. FTSE up 92, 1.4%. CAC around up 81, 1.7%. So that's the biggest mover there. Asia, we're up as well. Nikkei up 4.54.
2.1%, regaining the stuff they lost last Friday. Shanghai only up 8, though. That's 0.3%. Hang Seng up 4.15, 1.6%. We've got oil up 92 cents, trying to make a bounce back here. That's 1.8%, but still only 52.57. Brent 61.14, that's up 94 cents. Spread there is about $8.50, as low as we've seen in a while. Natural gas, 4.32, that's down 8 cents. Barbob up to 146. We had Barbob last spring, it was like 199, it's down 50 cents. That's unbelievable. Home heating oil, 187. And we've got gold up 260, 1249. Silver up 12 cents. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Hawks still suck.
They do. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash on the Kennedy Express lanes eastbound just before Fullerton that's causing some congestion as you're heading toward the loop on the express lanes there, so keep that in mind. Apparently the crash is clear, but some resulting congestion there on the inbound Kennedy. Outbound side looks okay. Same with the Edens. Eisenhower, Stevenson, traffic starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report. South side looks good for the most part. We do have traffic lights flashing red on Lakeshore Drive at Roosevelt Road. That's causing some issues, so keep that in mind. Out in the suburban tollways, all quiet. Weather today, lots of sunshine. We warm up a few degrees, partly cloudy skies, a high of 39. Right now, it's mostly clear and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 69 today. Right now, it's clear and 45. In sports, as Chief mentioned, Blackhawks continue to struggle. They dropped their eighth straight last night, losing 6-3 in Winnipeg. Coyotes lost to the Bruins 4-3. NBA hoops, Bulls were off. Suns were blown out by the Spurs 111-86. In baseball, White Sox signed former Pirates pitcher Ivan Nova to a contract, and former Cubs bench coach Brandon Hyde took the managerial job with the Orioles. He'll become Baltimore's new manager, replacing Buck Showalter.
Chief, does the Orioles have anybody?
No, especially with Machado being traded last year, they really have nothing left, as far as I know.
Robert, how are you? Welcome, buddy.
Doing very well. How about you guys? Thanks for having me on the show. Great to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back. You're back without your henchman, Lou. He's on tomorrow.
I know.
What? All right, I'm going to make $20 million this year, I hope. Does that mean next year, not this year? I keep hoping. Does that mean I get to use you as my accountant?
Sure, you can use me now if you'd like to. It's all good. Glad to help out.
What I read your help. I read your article here as usual, spot on. You've been on before talking about how much people have to pay for when they're on the road. A Major League Baseball player, how much of the income, when it's all said and done at the end of the year, how much of it is paid in his own state versus all the other places that try and steal it from him?
Depends on what team you play for. There are several states and teams that have no tax. The teams in Florida, the team in Seattle, Washington, the teams in Texas. But if you play for a team like the Cubs or the White Sox, the state tax rate, the way it would work is players go to spring training. And whether it's Arizona or Florida, you're not going to pay any tax in spring training. So those 45 days, you're not paying any tax. Once the season starts, you have half your games at home. And in this case, they would pay on half the games at home. The rate is 4.95%. And when they go on the road, only some of the games on the road would be taxable. So it's a good majority in some of the higher states like California. You're paying 13.3% plus the federal 37%. In the road taxes, you're over 50%. Now, if you're a resident of a taxing state, if a player is a resident of California, as he goes around the other states to play the other major league teams, he will get a credit in California for the other state taxes he pays. The biggest difference between now and the last time I was on is that under the new tax law that Trump put in last year, is you're no longer able to deduct all those state taxes that you pay on your federal tax return. That's a big difference. So in other words, it used to be for every $100,000 of state taxes you paid, assuming you weren't subject to alternative minimum tax, you would be able to deduct $40,000 on your federal tax return. No longer.
Okay, so in other words, you don't. Well, it's interesting. Thank you for that, because I thought, say you're on the road, you're playing Miami, and you're on the Dodgers, that for those 3 or 4 days, you're actually in Florida, that you don't have to pay if you're a resident of California. That in California, you're saying you still do. You just get to deduct the Florida.
Yeah, that's right. In other words, if you're a California resident and you're playing the Marlins, You're not going to pay any tax to Florida because they don't have a state income tax, but you are going to continue to pay. You're going to pay tax to California on your worldwide income. But what happens is you used to be able to say, okay, on your federal return, you used to do what's called itemized deductions. The state taxes were one of those. If you, like I said, if you had $100,000 of state taxes, you would deduct that on your federal tax return, and you'd pay $40,000 less in taxes.
So
that is gone. That will hurt the athletes a lot.
So it's not like when you're in Florida for those 4 days or 8 days, if you go there twice, that you're a citizen of Florida and you file a return there for those 8 days and don't have to count it in California. That's not the way it works.
Correct.
So is there like some special form you just pay when you're on the road? I guess there must be, huh?
Well, it comes right. Most of the teams take it right out of your
paycheck.
You know, and each place is different. The city of Detroit was having trouble getting people to cooperate with their law, so they hired like an outside counsel, and they went and they sent a lot of letters to hockey players and some of the other sports, but mostly hockey players, to making sure they get their share of the pie.
And they're mind their share.
That's right.
Wow. So it means you're busy.
Yeah, things are going good. I can't complain. Thank you for asking.
Well, the do the teams normally make up the difference?
No, but that's an interesting point, because what will happen is, like in my article, we took a look at Bryce Harper.
That's what I was
saying. Bryce Harper was to sign with, you know, say he got 10 years, $350 million. If he signed with the Nationals, what happened would be, playing for the Nationals is almost like playing in no tax state. In other words, they only have a tax on people that are residents. So if Harper or any of his teammates plays there, but they're not a resident of D.C., they don't pay any state tax there. So Harper is a resident of Nevada. The difference between what he would pay in total federal taxes and net out on the $350 million, he would net out approximately $203 million if he was in D.C., and if he was in the worst-case scenario, the teams that were the Dodgers, he would net out $182 million. So it's a difference of over $20 million. Now, you would say, well, that's not a lot. It is a lot. $20 million is a lot. You know, he's making, you know, we projected, you know, based on articles that we read, that he'd be in somewhere in the 350 range. It's a lot of money, but again, as I've said before, it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
So the... But now, would the Dodgers normally say, all right, I guess we got to come up and pony up $20 million to be even, or no?
Scott Boras, his agent, will for sure.
Yeah.
He will say, you know, it's just not $20 million, it'll be more, but good point. They would say, okay, look, I know what I can net for the Dodgers. You know, I'm not saying that when players go to make a decision that taxes are the only thing that goes in. There's many factors that, you know, come into play in players making a decision. Playing on a winning team, playing a manager with certain teammates, living in a certain climate, you know, wanting to be part of a certain culture, you know, maybe family background, family history in a particular state, you know, where you live. But taxes should be on the list, and most times it is. Again, it may not be the number one factor, but it should be somewhere on that list.
But if you're depending on your, I'll say, looks and personality, if you become, if you're selling razor blades on TV, and you make another $100 million doing that over your career, which if you're personable, you certainly can. Well, that makes a difference too. You're paying more on that in California if you're living there.
That's right. Most of the players, you know, like I said, you know, you can't just have a relative or something. You have to have bona fide residency. Where you register to vote? Where's your driver's license? Where's your family base? Where your kids go to school? But you would probably get more opportunities for endorsements in a state like, you know, California. But just because you play there doesn't mean you have to live there. We got to remember, you know, most of these states, not California, but most of these states have a rule. If you spend more than 183 days in our state during the year, you're automatically deemed to be a resident. However, you got to remember that they play half the games on the road. So even though they're there for 6 months, half that time is out on the road.
Robert, is this... Kevin, if you have a question, just pile on. But if you have a, is this just sports? Or in other words, if I get my, we're zero of taxes, Florida. I'll say if I'm in Florida,
yes.
And all of a sudden somebody says, God, this chief, we're going to put him in this catalog with a bunch of old men, and he's going to be in the sweatshirt look. This is, you know, Rodney David for the regular guy look. I'd be in there.
Yep.
So they fly me to New York, and I make, for just imagine me making $1 million being a model. In New York, now, is that treated by New York the same as if I was a baseball player in New York and saying, you made that money here, we want our cut?
If you go and perform there, certain states have de minimis rules. In other words, if you spend less than a certain number of days in a state, you view to be as an occasional entrant. So put it this way, athletes are high profile, high salary, and, you know, because of the internet, very easy to track when they were there. So I think you're starting to see more compliance by the normal guy, you know, with companies like, you know, the bigger, some of the bigger companies out there that their executives regularly travel. But there are, you know, there are a little bit, you know, there's a couple exceptions for the normal guy, but however, most of those don't apply to the athletes. Again, it's money grab for, you know, for the other states and a way to get revenue, you know, from athletes as they come to the state.
So like,
and they can't, the athletes can't vote in that state if they're a non-resident. They can't vote, so they really can't hurt the politicians there.
So for instance, a runway model from Chicago goes to New York and makes $1 million in a week. She probably is under the radar and just gets the check here and pays in Illinois.
I think a runway model making that kind of money would be on the radar. And
okay.
Her agency would probably withhold from her paycheck. If she was self-employed, they would not withhold. They probably wouldn't know. But I would advise reporting it. You know, you should always report
it. If she made $5,000, it might fly under the radar.
Right, it might fly under the radar, but again, I would, if she was an Illinois resident, I would file the New York return. You won't get a full dollar-for-dollar credit because the New York rate is higher, but again, with New York, New York State would tax you if you came there. New York City doesn't, just like Washington, doesn't tax non-residents, so if you got there, you wouldn't pay the New York City tax. So it would cost you a couple percent more, but again, if it's on $5,000, it's not really going to matter. If it's on $100,000, it would matter a little bit more, but you should, if you work there, you should pay there.
So it's
and in all cases, it sounds like you advise your clients to follow the law.
Yes, you follow the law. There's some planning techniques that can help you. One interesting thing under the new tax law, we talked about the itemized deduction, you know, being able to deduct things like state taxes. Also, the ability to deduct items like miscellaneous unreimbursed employee business expenses, union dues, agent fees, conditioning costs. Some will say to me, are those deductible? The answer is it depends. They're not deductible for federal income tax law, but a couple of states have already decided they're not going to follow federal income tax law. California and New York being two of them, I know off the top of my head, that they're not going to follow federal income tax law, so you still would be able to get a benefit if you work in New York, whether you're a resident or not, and take off some of your itemized deductions, like we just mentioned, the unreimbursed employee business expenses.
Robert, didn't the deductibility – sorry, Kevin, I'm dying to ask him this question. Didn't the deductibility of, like, skyboxes and tickets and those things change with this tax law as well, as in, like, they're not deductible?
Yes, one of the big things, you know, is the and this is big where you guys are in the Midwest, the ability to deduct a lot of people went out and bought college tickets, and if they wanted to get preferred tickets, they would pay almost like a fee above and beyond the cost of the ticket. That used to be 80% deductible. That is deductible no longer, and that hurt a lot of the big programs. It's going to hurt Michigan, Ohio State, and those schools. So that they're trying to figure out a way to work with that, or you know, within the law, or you come up with tax planning techniques to be able to do that, to make that deductible again.
I haven't seen any appreciable. I haven't heard anybody complaining over a beer, because I run into some people every now and then. But I haven't heard a hue and cry, for instance, at the skybox at the Bear game is not deductible this year. Is that because for this year they were able to pay that last November and it doesn't hurt yet, but this next year it will? Do you think there's going to be any change in people's behavior?
That's probably a good analogy, that people probably paid it ahead of time, like agent fees and other things like skybox as well. I think it will affect the college game, that's for sure, and they're going to have to come with new and innovative ways to try to work with the law, and the IRS should come out with comments, and it will be interesting to see where that winds up.
Well, because, I mean, even here in Chicago, the Hawks and the Bulls basically suck right now, and there's companies that have had six seats at $400 a pop forever and, you know, taking 35% off, and now they can't do that. Is that even in a board meeting, or do you think somebody's going to say, hey, should we cut down to four or what? I mean, it's a lot of money, and not be able to give them away.
Could be. It depends on a lot of things that the company's doing, but, you know, a lot of times I've been on the show, the Hawks especially in the last several, maybe not the last 1 or 2 years, but they've had a good run for a while, won a couple cups, but that could be, that's definitely a possibility, Tom.
Well, because this is 5 years ago, I had this discussion with somebody, and he alleges, Robert, that he has the best skybox at the Bears. And you might be one of the only people that know this, but what do you suppose the tickets were 5 years ago? There are 20 seats in there. And you pay per person, and on top of it's all the food and booze. What do you suppose the tickets were 5 years ago?
I can't even imagine.
$2,000 a piece. So it's $40,000 a game, plus booze and food. So I got to believe the difference between that deductible and not deductible is a big deal. Even if you got money, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
But I
and then you go sit in the suite and you hardly get to watch the game. It's a great deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're doing it for business purposes. You're bringing politicians or whatever and that kind of thing, right, hoping to get. So, I mean, obviously, it's worth it to you, but boy, you really got to get the right 40 people in there to make it worth 40 or 20 people to get make it worth 40
right,
grand.
Right. It comes down to cost benefit. Is the cost of the tickets worth the benefit of the business that you might get? So it's a tough decision, and some companies may be more financially secure and able to do that than others. And some people, you know, think that it's might think that it's worth it to try to get new business, and as a way of doing that, they like to take their clients to the best seats in the house.
But times 10 games, that's $100,000+ difference not being deductible. Wow.
Let alone two of them that don't count.
Yeah, well, that's right. Two of them that don't count. But so where do you think all these guys are going to go? Do you have any predictions? Bryce Harper and Machado?
No, I'm not in the predicting business, but I do think, you know, people will always say it's not about the money, but I think with Boros it will be about the money. And, you know, when we were writing the article, we you know, read several accounts of what, not necessarily where they'll go, but who's in the running. But, you know, we said, oh, well, how much money should we project that they make? And we came out with the $350 million. I think that Harper ultimately, with Boros running the show, will get more than that.
What? How long do you think, if the answer could be forever, do you think the federal not letting the state stuff be deductible is going to last, or do you think that's going to be an amendment?
I think it's in the law until, I think it was 2025. So I think it will come back, you know, will come back at some time because, you know, some of the states are crying about it, and it's a big deal. Yes, they increased, you know, for the normal people, the regular, quote unquote, would use the regular guy, they did increase the standard deduction, but, you know, that's, they limited your state and local taxes / property taxes to $10,000. So unless you have a ton of charity and a ton of mortgage interest, if you're a married guy, you know, the IRS gives you $24,000. If you have a ton of mortgage interest, charity, and anything else that would be deductible, you'd be over the $24,000. But, you know, it's a big, big difference. In sports, in the four main team sports we've been talking about, it really makes the difference between California and the no-tax states that much larger. Used to be, okay, well, I pay all this money to California, I'm going to make up 40% of that on my federal return. That's no longer in there. So the difference between the states with the tax, the teams like the Dodgers or whatnot will have to pay more to get their players. And the teams like, you know, in a different sport, the Cowboys or the Seahawks, whatever, they'll let you know that, look, our state has no tax. So they'll make sure that you know that.
So the state income tax is not deductible either, like with the over a certain amount, like the property taxes or state income tax?
That's right. The state income taxes combined with federal, the state income taxes combined with property taxes are limited to $10,000.
The politics of that are always fascinating to me because the people from the states that are all for it and say, you know, we should get these blue states or all states that have tremendous amount of government activity there, federal government activity. When you look at, you know, like the New Mexicos and the Alabamas and the amount of federal money that pours into those places is pretty dramatic. You know, it's not all that fair. But Illinois gets, what is it, Matty, 45 cents back on a dollar from Washington?
Something like that, yeah.
And New Mexico gets $2 back or something. It's a big difference.
It is a big difference.
So what, at this time of the year, where the major league meetings, are you actually down with these guys?
I am not in Vegas this year. I've gone in the past, and it's been interesting. It's a good place where a lot of the people in the business, the agents, the financial guys, the general managers get together, a lot of, you know, sports writers. And there hasn't really been much big news that comes out of there, but I think a lot of groundwork is being laid. You know, they talked about what the Mets might do, and there's a lot of hullabaloo because there's rumors about them trading, you know, one of the top young pitchers, Noah Syndergaard. The Mets have a new GM who used to be in the agent business, so it's interesting from that point of view, but there hasn't been any huge trades that come out of there, any blockbusters that have come out of Vegas yet.
Robert, what are the non-financial considerations that are biggest with some of these athletes when they sign? Obviously,
sure.
A winning team would be one, but what else comes into play there?
Which sport did you talk about, Kevin?
Baseball? Oh, let's take baseball because it's hot right now.
No problem. You might want to play for a particular manager. You might want to play, you have certain teammates that you like that woo you and intrigue you to go over there. Maybe a favorable climate. You know, they're all part of the, you know, family considerations. Maybe your family doesn't want to live on the West Coast if they're from the East Coast. If a free agent grew up in New York, you might want to play for the Mets or the Yankees. There's a lot of things that go into the equation that I think players will weigh, and they should weigh, more than taxes. However, tax has to absolutely be in the equation somewhere to make sure, you know, because look, as we proved out with the example I gave on Harper, you know, $35 million a year is not the same in California as it would be in D.C. or as it would be in Florida, one of the other no-tax states.
Are there
I would imagine in some cases there's very much climate driven, especially if you want to live close to where you play. Say you like golf and you just want to live in a climate where you can play golf all year long or something like that. Does that kind of thing come in a lot too?
Absolutely. There's a bunch, and don't think that your family doesn't come in. Don't think that a lot of players may want to see with their wife and their kids, may, if they have children, may want to go ahead and live 6 months out of the year or whatnot. But also, like you mentioned at the beginning, Kevin, to be on a winning team. You know, some guys may just want to go for the biggest gross check. But as we allude in the article, the biggest gross check may not be the biggest net check. And, you know, it's a big thing. A lot of factors go into that. And at O'Connor Davies, we just run the tax numbers, run some projections for these fellas, especially this time of year when they decided to go, so that they have the ammunition to go back to the teams and try to make the best decision for them.
What is it? Is it come into play? Now you see baseball is on a lot, so there's no real excuse for it. But Robert, for the first 8 years the guy played here, I don't think I ever saw Ichiro play. They're all playing at the 9 o'clock at night. I never stayed up that late. He's in Seattle. And is that a factor for these guys? They at least want to be where people can see them?
Sometimes it is. Again, sometimes players have different motives. The paychecks, the family, the climate, being on a winning team, it's all very different. We just make sure that, they've considered the taxes and they understand what the difference may be.
Are there teams that, I guess baseball or football, are there teams that are known to be teams and play for your own self teams or no? Where everybody, where everybody on a team, like Atlanta used to be, the captain takes you out no matter who you are and says, look, we play to win. If the guy asks you to hit a two hopper to second, you hit a two hopper to second, you don't bitch about your batting average. Are there teams that are known for everybody bunts, and there are teams where nobody bunts? I mean, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it depends on the culture. That could change, with a manager. I mean, look at the Red Sox. You know, they had a good team, but they weren't able to get over the top. And then last year they brought in a manager, they made some trades, and everybody worked in, cohesive unit, and they were able to get over the top and win the championship. And they had some great performances, not only from their top guys like J.D. Martinez, but, the manager had a great World Series, and some of their lesser-known guys, wind up stepping up and doing it for them. So I think when teams get on a roll, like you can see the momentum, and it's also a chance. Everybody wants to win the ring or the cup in hockey, but you got to remember it's also a chance for players to make a little bit extra money. Now it pulls in comparison. The Red Sox share I think was $476,000 for each guy who was on the team for the full year, but that's not even the minimum salary in baseball. But they were able to put it all together, and I think it depends on the team, depends on the culture, and that may change over the years.
Well, I unfortunately have to watch those guys a lot because my local saloon is a Boston bar. I don't think I've ever seen a team with that good of players play small ball and play as unselfishly as those guys did all year.
That's why I mentioned. And especially, they had a little bit of slump, I think it was the end of August, but they got it back together, and they really came on in the playoffs, and you can see the momentum. And you want to hit a home run, we'll hit a home run. You want a starting pitcher to go down to the bullpen and pitch a couple innings and throw 97 for two innings, they did that too. So a lot of guys sacrificed for the better of the team.
It sounds like you're a Boston fan.
My two sons are. I grew up being a Mets fan, but my two sons, the funny story is when they were growing up and they were in Little League, maybe 6 or 7 years old, they were on the Red Sox. And all of a sudden, that I think it was probably in 2004 when the Red Sox wound up winning the World Series. They wound up liking the Red Sox because they were on the Red Sox.
Well, that makes sense. Hey, Robert, thank you very much. As usual, very, very illuminating. Good stuff. We have you back soon. We'll say hello to Lou for you tomorrow.
Take care of yourself. How can we find you? How can somebody find you?
On Twitter, at SportsTaxMan, or on our website, O'Connor Davies. It's PKFOD.com. So it's my first initial, R, last name Riola, R-A-I-O-L-A, at PKFOD.com. Thanks, fellas, for having me on. Merry Christmas. Talk to you guys soon.
Yes. SP Futures up 2350. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Not tomorrow. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger as well. SP Futures up 24 now. Dow Futures up 224. NASDAQ up 73 as we're on the, we're back to cutting a deal with China, and Trump is going to intervene and letting the lady loose in Canada if they come through with a deal. So he basically admits that we picked up somebody and threw him in jail because of a trade deal. Boy, oh boy. I don't know. Carl, how are you? What is that? Why does that bother me?
Well, it ought to bother you. Is first off, if what she stands accused of doing, which is intentionally structuring transactions in a fraudulent way to evade sanctions, I mean that's the allegation, right?
Right.
That she essentially put a subsidiary together that was captive. That's an awful lot like what Jeff Bezos did with Amazon to evade sales taxes in the States with his distribution centers, isn't it?
Yep.
It's the same thing, it's just on an international scale, alright? By the way, he's never been picked up and indicted, okay, or threatened with extradition or anything like that. But the essence of it is the same crime. If that is true, then since when does having a trade dispute over intellectual property theft, which is the real crux of what's going on with China, right? It's stealing. Since when does that have anything to do with criminal fraud?
I would agree.
All right. So if, in fact, Trump does this, because, you can say whatever you want, right? You make all the noise you want. But if, in fact, Trump does this, I would argue that is the first actual impeachable offense I've heard.
That wouldn't be... Could you, without asking anything too close to your own business, which I would never dig into, Kevin has... when at Better World Books, a lot of times they would, and at the banks he worked in, they would go buy pretty high-end servers or things like that. And he claims that attached to the purchase agreement, not just he claims, Kevin would never lie to us, is some sort of a, I won't say an oath, but something that says you're not going to resell them to people on certain lists or whatever. If you're not going to sell them to...
That's not an oath, that's a law.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to say. Now, if in fact we decided, guess what, Iran's really bid for these things... before it was wrong, now we had this treaty, it was right for a while, to sell him planes and stuff, and now he pulls out of the treaty. What is the strength of all that stuff? What if one's in transit, what if one's whatever? What if you're a country that never signed the agreement? So why is that enforceable if they're not even in there? What if you're a country that signed the agreement, we pull out, you're still in? Why shouldn't he be able to sell? I'm not trying to give stuff to Iran. Don't get me wrong. I'm trying to figure out who's on horseback in here and who's on foot. And it seems kind of complicated, given the changes we get out of Washington on a weekly basis, almost.
Well, it is, and it's not. All right. There's an example that used to apply to a fair degree of high-end computer equipment, but no longer does, and that's what's called ITAR. Still does, by the way, if you buy certain kinds of firearm gear that is commercially available and can be bought by civilians. Night vision equipment in particular falls under this, but there's others. And essentially, in order to buy it legally, you have to certify that, A, you're a U.S. resident and citizen, that it is for your purposes, that you are not buying it on behalf of any foreign entity, period, and that if you at some point in the future decide to sell it to somebody who isn't a U.S. citizen, or take it out of the country, even on a temporary basis, that you have to go to the Department of Commerce, get a license. Now, this also used to apply in the computer world, where this came into play, is that cryptography gear was considered a munition. There was
really?
A huge flap in the 1990s related to this thing called PGP, which was the way that people used to pass around encrypted email and things like this before, you know, Signal and all these other things came out. And they threatened the author of the program, Zimmerman, in prison because he published it, made it available, anybody wanted it, and the U.S. government says, you can't do that. Well, whether or not that's a real enforceable law or whether there's a First Amendment problem there, never really kind of got sorted out, but this came back around much more recently with the guy that was selling the plans to print guns on CNC machines and printers. Okay, it's the same law. And so the thing is that if you've got a sanction that is out there like this, it has force of law if you have any contact or any touch with the United States. And the thing is, this Huawei gear, it is in U.S. installations, and these people do business in the U.S. So if you want to have the privilege of working with the United States and the U.S. banking system, all that, you play by their rules.
Okay, I get it. I'm kind of curious is what this, if the whole treaty broke apart, I guess I'd understand it. I guess I'm a little curious when one place pulls out kind of in a fit like we did. I don't know how you can hold the Britain, the France that are saying, hey, we signed it, we're still in, what's the matter with you, to your new rules. Which is
what gives Britain or France or anybody else the ongoing right to run money through the Federal Reserve Fedwire system?
Well, I mean, the fact they do a lot of business there. Well, I'm saying
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that this is a privilege. There is no right to transact business inside the borders of the United States.
Oh, I get that. I'm just kind of stunned at the enormity of what these things are. When you change your mind that quickly, all of a sudden expecting everybody to come along with you. I mean, we're not about to stop every transaction of all money to Britain because we pulled out of an agreement that everybody got into 3 years ago with all the right intentions. Now, I mean, have we told Boeing that they can't sell the planes, Iran, or are they still ongoing?
Well, actually, we have made rather clear that those nations and firms that try to evade this are subject to being sanctioned themselves. And yeah, that potentially does include Boeing. And so, this stuff does get really dicey, alright? I mean, there's no doubt about it. But there's a difference between sticking up your middle finger as a foreign business, or for that matter as an American business, is saying, you know what, we're gonna do this, you wanna sanction us, then, you go ahead and do that. And intentionally structuring transactions to hide them. The second one is, that's how people go to jail in this country.
Well, I mean, without making a political statement, maybe the guy in jail should be. I'm sitting here, Carl. Not that I concern myself, my own stuff with my clients. I do. I have a lot of positions in the XLE, and I got puts. We're fine. We're doing all right in there, actually. But all of a sudden, we've got oil kind of going up a little bit here, and the story is that we're going to squeeze Iran, and if the president has his will, there's going to be, not a teaspoon of oil is coming out of Iran than anybody who's not snidely whiplash buys. And all of a sudden, oil starts going down the crap hole like if somebody's got a foot on it. And I'm like, how could this possibly be happening? When we got Venezuela offline, we've got, now we're taking Iran offline, and we're making this very, very difficult. And out of the blue, one morning, probably a week after all the people that know something, get this missive. There's now 8 countries that are on a you're okay list if you buy oil from Iran.
Yeah. Why don't we go talk to Congress about that? Because after the first set of oil shocks, when Saudi Arabia played their games and caused gas lines and 5 gallon maximums that you could buy at once. Remember those? Really well. We exempted OPEC along with any other nation that feels like doing this from antitrust laws in the United States.
Right.
And so every time you hear there's, you know, that OPEC's meeting or Russia's turning the screws on oil or this, you know, Saudi Arabia is or Iran is or whoever is this time around, or that they're agreeing to flood the market and, you know, whatever the case may be, go thank our Congress who a number of years ago turned around and said, oh, yes, you can screw us anytime you want, and it's perfectly fine, even though it's been illegal to do it for 100 years.
Well, not only that, Carl, the deal they cut with Saudi, and it's not like anybody I know in the Fed knows this history, but I know some people, was if they kept the dollar is the only thing that you can buy oil in, that they would allow them to buy U.S. Treasuries sort of off the transaction, where it was never really known, it was never published how much they bought. So if you were to say that the auction was for $30 billion in 30-year notes, 30-year bonds, it would be not notes. If the Saudis bought five, the other five would just sneak through. It wouldn't be in a separate column and say bought by Saudi. So nobody.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Does anybody actually believe that Belgium, which is, by the way, is where most of those transactions are run through, does anyone believe that they have the GDP to buy, you know, 300% of GDP in treasuries?
I'd say no.
I mean, it's not like it's. The problem in today's world is that it's not like it's truly possible to hide those transactions. Because they pop up somewhere, you know, that's the funny thing about double entry accounting is that there's, you know, there's a debit on one side or credit on the other, so.
But it's not the same as, you know, there's $30 billion being bought, and oh, by the way, the Saudis bought another $5 billion after the auction and being accounted. It's not, don't take this wrong, only you would know that.
I'm with you on that, and you know, scams are scams. And this whole petrodollar thing, though, is now cracking apart, but that's what happens when you put together, you know, systems that are essentially intended to hose somebody by hiding what's going on.
Well, a cartel is, in the immortal words of Milton Friedman, a cartel is a very, very difficult thing to police, and they usually fall apart by their own weight, because everybody cheats.
There's no reason not to cheat.
But the morality, and I guess I, growing up on the South Side with nuns, Carl, I still have some. If we're going to exempt eight countries at our choosing, and India, China, the Emirates, is getting Iran oil so they can resell it, you and I are in the Monaco. If we buy some from them, we're going to jail. And what the hell? Why? I mean, you know, if somebody else sends them a computer, they're going to jail? I mean, this seems real arbitrary to me. I mean, is it?
Well, it is. And I mean, the point of it, the intent anyway, I don't know how effective it is. But the intent is, you know, these are bad people. They're trying to build nuclear weapons, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay, talk to me a bit, you know. Yes, all right. If I accept it, these folks are so dangerous. And that they should not have nuclear weapons, and we should do whatever we have to do to stop them because they're so dangerous. And by the way, the reason they're so dangerous is because they're crazy Muslims. Let's just cut the BS and call it what it is. Then explain to me why Pakistan has them.
Well, yeah, it's
because guess who's over there? The same people, basically.
Well, I think that the. I'm not against anybody's religion, Carl, but I don't know if you ever listened when Lou was on. And Lou, he's our maven like you are to worldwide stuff because he's been in the Air Force and done legal work in all these countries and whatever. And he says the issue with the Muslim religion is that 10, 15, 20% of the group is absolutely convinced that you spread your religion by taking away people's secular ability and getting involved in governments. And that's clearly not our way. So no matter what, whether it's, even if you don't mind the religion, if you don't mind anything, there's that part of it that feels like maybe the Catholics did in the 1200s. And it's absolutely against the U.S. way of doing business, where we try and be as secular as we can be. You don't always get there. And religion is out of it. And they want religion in it. So there is a conflict there, I believe.
I don't care how someone prays or what they, you know, that sort of thing has never bothered me and still doesn't. What does bother me is when you tell me I have to do it.
Oh yeah, that's my point.
And that's the problem with this stuff is that, you know, that historically leads to an intractable situation where the only option is one group of people or the other, either the people who are making the mandate or the people who are refusing, one of them ends up dying, because if the only way to solve the problem is for you to do it your way and you say no, well, like, you know, eventually the guns come out.
Right.
So that can't be part of a civilized society, because it isn't, by definition. It's not civilized society. But I don't know how we solve that, you know, in the paradigm that we have today, other than making clear to everybody involved that, you know, there's a reason we have a First Amendment and allegedly separation of church and state. Now, you know, you can argue whether or not we actually have that in the United States, too. But at least we don't go so far as to say, you know, do it this way or we're going to cut your hand off.
We're doing it about as best you can, considering the fact we're still humans.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do better. We always could do better, but, you know, people are political. I mean, there's got to be politics in a one-room jail cell, for God's sake. It's just the way we are. Right?
That's one of the, you know, one of the inevitable things that comes up in the human experience is that somebody decides that they're better than everybody else and that they're going to tell you how to live. And,
right.
And, you know, and then you start intertwining it with things like, well, you know, I didn't get what I deserved out of society. So by the way, you have to pay me. You know, look at what's going on right now down in, you know, in Tijuana. We just had a group of these so-called migrants that allegedly are being persecuted by gangs and violence. They show up at the border and demand $50,000 as an act of extortion in order to go home.
That whole thing is, this is all an issue, Carl. I mean, the people that I heard being interviewed the other day, evidently there's some huge drought in Honduras, which of course doesn't reach any of the papers. It's not that much different than the potato famine in Ireland. You know, it's sort of the, you know, here's how I look at things and try and be as many level as I can. I try and bring on some of the smartest people I can so I can learn from them, but two things. One is, you can't have, somehow or another, the collective we, is part and parcel to the reason why Mexico never seems to get out of its own way governmentally. Now, whether it's our appetite for drugs or whatever we're doing, we're not part of the solution down there in a lot of ways. We're part of the problem. But having said that, you know, it doesn't mean we should just, you can't have the safety valve for millions of people can't just be to come here no matter what. I mean, without any sort of a deal. But I also know that these people coming up from Honduras, say there's 5,000 of them, when was the last time you were in Chicago? If next time you come, I'll drive you around some of the neighborhoods that used to be. And I could probably drive you to a spot in Inglewood where there's 3 abandoned schools and the houses are down on damn near every block. And I could put 3,000 people up in those schools, teach everybody how to redo houses, start building around there. And I'm going to say in 5 years, you got a thriving community, Carl. And there's nobody there. There used to be 80,000 black people left the Illinois in the last, what, decade, or is it the last year, Manny? There's nobody there. So the idea that we can't possibly put 5,000 people who are willing to work in an area and in 10 years from now have a thriving community is totally wrong. I mean, I think. Yet, do we want everybody just piling over like it's a, you know, it's a Oklahoma land rush? No. I mean, I don't know the middle, but there's some kind of a middle here that we're not going to get by yelling at each other out of the White House in some other place.
I mean, the middle is this: you can have, you know, I mean, let's face it. My roots and my family are from the continent. All right, I mean, pretty much everybody's unless you came, you know, unless you're a Native American for real, unlike Senator Warren. Okay, you know, but for me, I mean, certainly, and I think for most of the people who are listening, that's just the way it is. The difference is, when my ancestors came across, you worked or you starved. There was no safety net. There was no Social Security. There was no Medicaid. There was no free, you know, you had you sort of had free public schools, except there was no teaching in anything but English. So until you learned the language, you could have all schools you wanted. You didn't have any access to them. All right, so if you wanted to be an American, you had to come here and assimilate and be American. What you couldn't do is come across the border and say, oh, by the way, everybody has to deal with me in Spanish, because that's what I speak. People look at you like you had six heads. You couldn't do that.
I don't know. Where did you grow up? What city? You knew,
near Detroit.
Okay. I mean, Chicago, not quite that way, Carl. Amazing.
Oh, no. Look, I was out there, you know, during the 1980s. And I know exactly. I mean, even then, I know exactly what you're talking about, Neil. There's whole areas where, half the people spoke Polish, and that was it.
Yeah. I'm saying some people, and the people who had trouble with the language, have trouble with. Matter of fact, I have a good friend. He's kind of an engineer in the building here, but they also do. They'll remodel your kitchen or whatever, your bathroom, whatever, and some members of the family work. And I have not. There's not a lazy bone in any one of these guys' bodies, Carl. So it's not like, you know, maybe I have a real soft spot for it, but. The couple of the sons-in-laws are slow picking up English, and it's not a problem with me, and it shouldn't really be a problem with society or Trump. It's a problem for them because they can't go out and really get a job on their own. I know a couple of furnace guys that are Hispanic, and I know how furnaces work. So they can come to my place and get it done. They're not going to the average housewife and trying to communicate with her and get a job. It affects them horribly. It detracts from them, not you or me. You know what I'm saying? They instead of making 40 grand a year repairing furnaces are making 20 because they're only doing it in their own community because they don't know the language. But I knew
right. But see, the thing is this: that the push, the way that this used to work, is that you could go ahead and stay in your enclave and be segregated if you wanted to, okay, by choice. But if you wanted to become part of mainstream America, you had to make the effort to do it. Nobody owed you anything.
I agree.
And what ended up happening was that within a couple of generations. After everyone came across on the boat, they did become American because they didn't want to live in a slum for the rest of their lives. They wanted to go somewhere.
It was never
and do something.
If somebody dropped me, even though I had a year of Italian in college, which I didn't do very well at, I'm horrible at languages, Carl. You talk to me in English, and I'm bad at it. I'd be the last guy if you threw me over in Italy. I'm one of the smartest guys around in some areas. I'd be the last guy to speak fluent Italian. I'm just not good at it. Now, have you ever read Dick Butkus's book? His dad worked at Pullman, of all places. He was an electrician.
Yeah.
They're from Lithuania. And he never really got past the broken English. So he never made foreman. You know, it's not like it's people. I know you're not doing this, but some people will say it's hurting America that they're not, that Dick Butkus's dad never learned English. No, he still was an electrician. He worked at two house or apartment complexes and was the engineer there. Guy worked his tush off. It didn't hurt us. It hurt him. and you know, guys like Trump, they make it sound like it's hurting them. No, it isn't. You know what I'm saying? It's hurting themselves by not learning the language that quick.
Yeah, it is. But the thing is that when you turn around and you, it's the age old thing. Whatever you subsidize and pay for, you get more of. Okay, and the shift is subtle. It's small. You can't point at it and say, "Well, you know, it's just this." But any time that you do that, you get more of it. So, if you allow people to come into the United States, and for example, and I think this is going to cost Trump the election in 2020. That young Honduran chick that popped over the wall, 8 months pregnant, and then cranked out a baby like 4 hours later, right? All right. That image is going to be all over campaign ads 2 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
And rightly so, because the problem is this. We provided incentives for her to do that.
Well, you know.
And yes, the the changes happen at the edges, but the fact of the matter is that by doing that, and by the way, she was very, very blunt and forward about it. She says, oh, thank you, Jesus. The America gave me this great gift. Yeah, America gave you a great gift, about $500,000.
Well, maybe.
Well, no. Think. What's? Excuse me. How much per pupil is spent in American schools?
A lot. But
okay, so multiply by what, 12?
But think that these people don't pay taxes when they're here is not true either. They do.
Well, that's not the point. The point is that now all of a sudden she doesn't. The kid just doesn't qualify for assistance. So does she forever?
Well, I understand where that is, and I'm agreeing with you on how we can do things a hell of a lot better. But I tell you what, let's continue after the break. But becoming an American citizen, I'd be happy for my kid or someone else's kid too. I think it's a good thing. I'm just saying, if it's you, anyway, SP Futures up 23. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We're also Mr. Carl Denninger in rare form this morning. SP Futures up 22.75. Dow Futures up 224. NASDAQ Futures up 65. So we're pushing hard the upside. We'll see if we stay there. Didn't yesterday, obviously. DAX up 129, 1.2. FTSE is up 88, 1.2. CAC around up 90, that's 1.9. Not sure why they're up that much higher than everybody else, but they are. Nikkei got back a lot of what they lost, up 454, 2.1%. They've been getting hammered for the last 3 days. Shanghai up 8.3%. Hang Seng up 415, 1.6. Background to the news here is the president now says that they're working hard in the U.S.-China deal, and by the way, if they do one, he's going to intervene and let the lady out of jail in Canada. So take that, people that like separation of powers. He doesn't really like that much. Oil up a buck now, 52.65. Good, I'm long XLE. Brent up 103. Natural gas, 4.28. RBOB, 1.46. And we've got home heating oil, 1.87. It's been remarkably stable. Considering the fact we've had kind of a cold spell and everything else. Gold up 280, silver up 12 cents, 1465 on the silver, 1250, dead even, Maddie, on the gold. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start this morning. We do have a crash out in the southwestern suburbs, Route 126 westbound before Essington Road and 143rd Street. That's closed, Route 126, due to a crash that happened about 20 minutes ago. Crews are on the scene now working to get that cleared up, but Route 126 is closed. That's out just south of Bolingbrook in that area in the southwestern burbs. Looking okay on the Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. We have high traffic volumes on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same could be said for the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on Lakeshore Drive. Those earlier flashing traffic lights at Roosevelt Road are all clear. Out to the northwest, we have a crash route 20 between Long Common Parkway and Shannon Parkway. Route 20 is closed because Shannon Parkway and Long Common and Nestler is closed between Route 20 and Gansett Parkway. Three closures are expected to last several hours, it says, due to an accident. So a pretty significant crash that's affecting Route 20 specifically in a couple of areas there out near Elgin in the northwestern suburbs, so keep that in mind. But everything else is looking okay as far as the expressways, roadways, and tollways are concerned. We'll also have a relatively pleasant weather day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 39. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 69 today. Right now, it's clear and 46. In sports, Blackhawks dropped their eighth straight game, losing last night in Winnipeg 6-3. Hawks are back home tonight for a back-to-back. Coyotes lost to the Bruins 4-3. Suns were blown out by the Spurs in NBA Hoops 111-86. Bulls were off. White Sox signed Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher Ivan Nova to a contract to bolster their pitching staff. And former Cubs bench coach Brandon Hyde is leaving the organization to take the managerial job with the Baltimore Orioles. Chief.
Carl, two things. Hey, we can't let you go without talking about the labor numbers on Friday, but I know you're a man of the world, much more so than me, but I have to mention that I think you probably need to come live in Chicago for 6 months and see the difference in the percentage of taxes here people pay that are not federal income taxes versus maybe the sunny state of Florida, and that's probably why you're there. But it's...
Oh, remember, I lived in Chicago for 13 years.
It's getting worse.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I left.
I get that. Congratulations. I get that. I'm just saying.
I knew what was coming, and by the way, the one that really scared me was not so much income taxes and, you know, sales tax increases, things like that. It was property tax.
Let me tell you, you were a genius. Your worst fears, my significant other is, she's, shall we say, expanded her area that she does some real estate because, I mean, she, let's put it this way, there's not a prejudiced bone in her body, so she goes anywhere. And for some reason, she's fearless, which I don't get either, but she is. Doing some work. You know where Park Forest and those areas are?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, let's just say that the evil sword of something has landed on these poor people out there, to where some of these areas where these old style malls have closed up, where they ate up a lot of the taxes. She's sold three homes out there that are, I think they're in a $56,000 range, Carol. So we're talking about Tobacco Road. And I was out there because I didn't want to go by herself. Not that I'm going to do much. It's not like I got a machine gun on the top of my truck. there's no services out there, Carol. I mean, there's a school probably. I mean, there's a school, obviously. And the streets don't look like they've been fixed in forever. Guess what the taxes are in those houses?
I don't know that I want to know this, but
$5,500.
And I'm sorry,
$5,500.
Okay. That actually is not. I mean, all things considered, that's not really shocking to me. I owned a house on the, I guess you could call it, the near North Shore, Deerfield, and when I left there, I, of course, knew what I was paying in taxes. A couple of years ago, I went and I looked it up. It had doubled.
Yeah. Well, there's a guy out there who put a three-flat, remodeled a three-flat that she's trying to sell. She goes, a three-nice apartment. She goes, you wouldn't have any problem living in any one of them. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not gold-plated faucets, but they're very nicely done. So you're trying to sell for $96,000. Guess what the taxes are going to be?
Oh, probably 10.
11.5, and it'll be three times the mortgage.
Yeah.
This is all because one of those malls, they just sprinkle it around. And where I grew up in Evergreen Park, and I've told the story before, we were at 102nd Place, the other side of the street was Chicago. So Evergreen Park is like a little, like somebody took a bite out of Chicago. So we're surrounded on three sides by Chicago. So we really were Chicago. It just happened to be Evergreen Park. And because we had Evergreen Plaza, which was Rubloff's first big, development, went on to be, you know, national fame. The Evergreen Plaza paid taxes, I'm going to say, at a real rate. You know, Carson's and the places that were in there, Rothschild's and those old men's stores. And the taxes in Evergreen Park were 70% of Chicago. Nice school, the whole bit. Well, now the plaza's down. Walmart got in there and Menards got in there. They must have driven such a deal that now the taxes in Evergreen Park are a solid 150% of Chicago, maybe double. Where if you built a new home there, you couldn't do it. If you went in there and spent $300,000 for a home and built a real nice one, you couldn't afford the taxes. I mean,
but see, that's the thing is that, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, it won't happen here. Well, yes, it will happen there. It was the you know, that it was going to happen was clear where I was living, and it was like, well, there's nowhere around this area where it's not going to happen.
Well, but my point is, and I'm not giving you grief, I never would, you're my favorite man, the just the thought of somebody on CNBC making $1 million for flapping their gums, not that I'm against any of that, to say that these people don't pay any taxes is really ignorant, because they're paying up the wazoo. If you get a ticket for in front of your fire hydrant, it's $150. Nobody in Chicago gets away without paying taxes. They may not pay federal income taxes. But the other three legs of the stool, the payroll taxes, the state taxes, and the local taxes, they're paying the first day over the border, you're paying, Carl. Just saying.
Oh, yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And, you know, but the thing is that what everybody seems to miss is that it's the balance between taxes and demand for services.
Right. Okay. Well, in most places, they should be equal.
If you're going to allow people to access services that are, you know, that are unskilled, essentially, that are not able to pull enough weight to counterbalance the services that they consume, somebody else is going to get the bill.
I agree.
That's the essence of the issue, is that you have, you know, when my ancestors and your ancestors came over here to America, they could not pull their weight from a standpoint of accessing the services and paying enough taxes to cover it. Right? They couldn't. That's just the way it is. They didn't have the education, and they didn't have the language. And guess what? But the services didn't exist.
But I'll bet it didn't take long. You started out in the Italian grocery store, just talking to people in Italian, and in 2-3 years, you're managing a produce area. I mean, it didn't take long.
It didn't take long, but you know what? You know why it didn't take long? Because you had to do that.
Well, I think a lot of these people that come here do the same thing. I've never met anybody from Mexico but a lazy bone on their body, for God's sake, Carl. I mean,
that's true. But you know what? Go ahead and tell all the employers that okay, you can hire these people. They can come in here on work visas. But every one of them has to go through E-Verify, and they all got to get paid, you know, American money with American taxes paid out. And watch how fast those people don't have jobs because they can't speak the language.
I agree with that. My point is, we, as usual, not just in this country but everywhere, we're walking two different directions. If you want somebody to be able to contribute here illegally or not to whatever services they're getting, and they are paying taxes in some ways. The last thing you want to do is stop them from getting a job, because the only way to contribute is to get the job, right?
Well, that's true, but the thing is that at the same time, you cannot have a welfare state and an open border. You just can't.
I started this whole thing by saying you can't. It's easy to have an open border with Ireland when somebody shows up, when so many steamships show up a week, you can control it. Obviously, if you have a border, you got a problem. Let me ask you this. And I don't know if you know the answer, but for years, people who were, I'll use the term illegals, were able to get a job at damn near any restaurant. And you know, the interesting part, Carl, the thing that always bugs me, is once in a while, I used to go to these country clubs, you know, as a guest when I could play golf better. Every one of them were these, I won't say, not like the people around this show, these rockhead conservatives. You'd walk by the house where all the illegal guys were. We're working on the country club, and you get in the bar, and there's guys bitching about people being here illegally. And I go, yeah. I mean, if I were to stand up and say at Bushwood, I'll use the Caddyshack term, all you members of Bushwood, it's come to my attention that unbeknownst to any of us, bullshit, we have illegal people here working. We're going to stop that. We're going to get regular people to work here. And oh, by the way, that's going to mean a $100 increase in dues every month. Carl, that goes over like a fart in church, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, and the thing is, it's funny because one of the things that just recently popped up in the news is that now there's at least one person who works at Mr. Trump's little signature place down here in Florida,
yep,
that is actually suing over this.
Yeah.
Now I don't know that I'm not quite exactly sure what makes you think you can sue over the fact that you've been sitting here illegally working for the last, you know, however many years.
Yeah, yeah.
But she is.
Yes.
So.
Well, Carl, I have one quick question, and then Manny has a question from a listener. Then we got to talk about labor, which we never get to because we talked about this. All those years that people who were illegal got a Social Security card, essentially a fake one, went to the restaurant or wherever they got a job, gave the guy the number, and people sent in that money. Okay, this
right.
is before the federal government was automated enough or whatever. And I used to hear rumors that how many numbers were 0000 across. What happened to all that dough? Obviously,
they stole it. The government stole it. This is the really ugly part of this, because this happens all the time. So say that somebody gets your Social Security number, okay, and they use it. And they go get they put roofs on houses, all right. And that employer, quote unquote, pays, assuming that they're not paying a guy under the table,
right,
they're actually giving him a check. That he sends in that stuff with his 941, just like everybody else, right? All right. So what happens is the Social Security Administration knows instantly that that's not you. So what they do is they set up a second suspense account under your number. The other guy's name, or even your name, but you have no knowledge of it. When you go onto Social Security's website and you pull it up, every year they used to send you a summary of the wages that you earned and, you know, what your expected benefit was. Now you have to actually go online and look it up.
Right.
But when you go there, that information is completely gone. You cannot find it.
Really?
And the government steals the money because they know they will not have to pay it out.
I mean, it's not like these guys weren't paying. They just weren't ever going to. Maddie, what's our question? What do we got, bud?
Sure, yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at Stocks and Jocks, or you can write us stocksandjocks@live.com. Reese writes in, good show as always. He says, how about having illegals and caravanners, lots of able-bodied young men, build the wall under the direction of military and engineers, and when complete, citizenship awaits. Labor monies could be used elsewhere, skills taught, and so much more gained.
Well, how about this? How about we give them green cards? You know what? I don't like... Here's the problem with just handing out citizenship, all right? The premise of citizenship, and I'm speaking as somebody who had a very, very good friend of mine that was Romanian and went through the process. The premise of citizenship is not just that you learn English. It's that you also learn all the things that make America, America, like, you know, this fancy little thing called the Constitution.
Whoa, we're not going to give that test to our own kids, are we?
Well, you know, gee, you're supposed to pass it to get out of high school. Nobody seems to care about that so much.
No.
It actually mattered when I went through school. You actually had to pass American government and learn that stuff. They really meant it too. Nowadays not so much. But the thing is that I have no problem with saying, okay, you know, you go ahead and put that wall up, we'll give you permanent residency. However, that's not the same thing as citizenship. And to go through citizenship, I think you may have your green card, you have your permanent residency, but you ought to have to go through the same process that my friend went through. You have to show that you paid your taxes. You have to be able to prove it. And by the way, they actually audit. Okay? So if you cheat, you get caught, bang, you're done. You will not ever get it. So you have to prove you paid them. You have to be able to show that you have no criminal record. You know, that you really do intend to be an American, that you're not just playing a game here. And building a wall by itself is not enough. But
my answer,
should it give you a leg up the ladder? Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'll say this to Reese. It's not a bad idea, except there are people here that are not citizens that have served one and two terms in the Army, and that doesn't qualify them.
Well, Frank writes in, my German ancestors came over in the early 1700s and were schooled, married, buried, and conducted business in German. Mass was in German. My grandmother graduated from high school in rural Ohio and was schooled in German her entire life. She graduated in 1914. They fought in every skirmish, starting with the Revolutionary War, in German-speaking regiments. And he says, enough of the language-based ethnocentrism.
There's Polish people here that never left their neighborhood. There's a lot of... Chicago is much bigger on that, though, than most cities, I think, Carl.
It is, but here's the other thing. Yes, you had German-speaking regiments. Yes, that is absolutely true. But here's the thing. Your tax forms were still written in English.
Right.
Okay? So was your driver's test when we finally got driver's licenses. So was everything else. And you know what? If you wanted to not assimilate in that way, that was a choice.
Yep.
But what you couldn't do is turn around and force everybody else to live under your demands.
Yeah, you couldn't say, I need Germans on the German on the street signs.
No, and you know what? Here's the thing. Why were they all in German regiments? They chose not to learn English.
Right. Or be like me, just is lousy at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, don't be in France. I speak just enough French that I might not starve.
I might have a chance in Italy. I took a year of that in college. I have no chance in France. Zero.
Well, I had 2 years of French, but I haven't used it in 30.
Carl, so. I had French at Notre Dame for 2 days.
The nice thing, though, in Chief, in Europe, everyone speaks English, so you're fine.
Well, get a load of this. I had 2 days in French, and allegedly a first-year French class. I figured out in 2 days everybody else in there had at least like 3 years in high school but me. The lady who was teaching the class, this is at Notre Dame, right, is drop-dead gorgeous, about 25 years old, and I had to get out of that class. Believe me, I didn't want to. Believe me, I didn't want to. And she wore these little, whatever. It was really tough to say I want out of this one. The guy says to me, you want out of her class? I go, that's how bad it is.
I think you got to take the F and stick it out.
Oh, I could. All right, Kyle, you got a couple of minutes. What about the numbers, Freddie? Kind of more of the same?
The only thing that I thought was kind of interesting about those numbers is that the trend that we've had going on, and I've talked about now for the last couple of years, with regards to educational split within the people getting jobs, has disappeared. Now, 1 month does not a trend make, okay? But if you see this continue over 2 or 3 months, what it says to me is that the slack at the bottom end of educational attainment has been taken up in the economy. And that portends some really bad things from a standpoint of the clash between push inflation from wages and the Fed.
I have a totally different view of that. The idea, the people that talk about wage push inflation, the reason why, Carl, is that I'm a hair older, and I still don't remember the first part of the inflation cycle in the 60s and 70s. But I remember the last part, which was considered to be inflation-driven. I mean, wage inflation-driven. But it's sort of, and in some ways that was correct, but I got a minute here, I'll talk about it. This is my view of that, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. I actually did all those calculations for Pullman. When the CPI was up 12%, you know, on a yearly basis, that quartered
right.
Up 3%, I'd add 3% to our bill to the city of Boston for the commuter cars, and I'd also add 3% to the guys who were buying the trucks from, the guys who were buying the seats from, the guys who were buying the air conditioners from. I mean, I did all that. And the unions had that in their contract. It wasn't a full 3%, but I think they got like 2/3 of it or something. Me as a salaried guy got zip, zip, zippo, which was not so hot. But I'm saying I remember that. But this was also 1978, 79, which is 10 years into it, really, or probably 8 years into it, because it probably started with the, it didn't start with the Arab embargo. That was the first time people really noticed it. It probably started the late 60s when we went off the gold standard to pay for the Vietnam War, and the Fed started putting money into the place. What I'm saying is, it's probably, to me, it's a very lagging indicator, inflation, which is very dangerous for the Fed and these other people. So for the first 5 years, I'm going to say labor, anybody working was getting flat-ass screwed because the prices were going up and you didn't have squat. But as these union contracts came up, you know, we had more not just city unions those days. We had regular unions. I'll use that term. It took a long time, Carl, before these formulas got into these contracts. So the last few years, when Volcker started doing his thing, which I don't really disagree how he did it totally, but when he did his thing, the inflation was out of the system, pretty much. If you were living it, you could tell it really wasn't. But because it's such a lagging indicator, it was still in the indices. Where to come up and say inflation last month was 0.5%, and I'd go, what do you mean stuff's going down? In other words, it's that lay. So the last
But what I'm concerned about is just that. Okay, that by the time it shows up in the CPI statistics, the damage has been done. The Fed will become reactionary.
That's exactly right. That's why I can't believe we're bleeping with this again in my lifetime, because it is so dangerous. And what I'm saying, Carl, is maybe the last year. The inflation was brought upon by people were still getting the wage increases based on the lagging indicator, and the companies would say, well, I got to raise the prices now because I got to give Joe another buck an hour. I'm going to say that was the last year or two, but it was not the first 12 years. And for a guy like Jerome Powell, who's supposed to be this smart, he can't say there's no wage inflation, therefore there's no inflation, because that was the tail end of it. The beginning of it, the people were working just like now. They were getting screwed. It was only like 4 years into it that our union contract finally came up and we were able to say, hey, look, we need an increase here even if it's just because of the wages. I mean, because of inflation.
The thing is that what I don't like about the internals of that report is that if that pattern persists, it suggests that the same thing that happened then is we're now in the late stage of what happened back then at that time. And that means that the screwing has already happened. Now the reactionary event's going to come.
The difference.
That's not good.
We got a minute, Carl. Let me explain to you, my smartest man on this, what I see the difference this time in the serious danger, and it's not being picked up, is we have the inflation has come dramatically in pockets, and those pockets are not counted appropriately in the CPI. And we're never going to get that money back. In other words, if Nehru jackets that everybody has to wear, which of course you don't, are 1% of the CPI, and all of a sudden tomorrow they go from $100 to $1,000. Well, you're not counting them squat. You're only counting them 1%, right? And then the next year, the next 10 years, they never move, yet everybody has to have one. That $1,000 is still in your annual budget. It never was counted, never will be counted, and yet it's there. That's the thing you bring up all the time as I've been using your name. That's the medical cost now. That's the King Kong in the jungle right now. Never got counted, never will be counted.
Yep, and that's the one that's going to burn us. And
that's exactly right.
The thing is I you know, give me another couple months. You come back at me in February if the same pattern is there.
We'll be back with you long before
February. I'm starting to get worried.
We got to go. We got to talk. We'll talk maybe next week because education, same way. We'll talk about it next week, buddy. We'll get you on. We'll squeeze you in for a half hour. I never run out of stuff to say. SP Futures up almost 30 now. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.